Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, cultural enrichment, and all-inclusive fares. Discover more at Viking.com.
From the opinion pages of the Wall Street Journal, this is Potomac Watch.
Michael Bloomberg qualifies for the next Democratic debate this Wednesday as his competitors seize on his many controversial statements and views. Plus, can any Democrat beat Bernie Sanders in the coming Nevada caucuses? Welcome. I'm Paul Gigot with the Wall Street Journal, here with Bill McGurn. Bill, how are you? And Kim Strassel. How are you, Kim?
Good. How are you, Paul?
Excellent. So let's talk about the story of the week. I think is the Democratic primary campaign is picking up in intensity and in heat, and it's done so not only because Bernie Sanders seems to be gaining altitude as he moves through the polls, moves through the caucuses. Now we're entering the third one this Saturday in Nevada, followed a week later by a primary in South Carolina, and then Super Tuesday 3 days later. So the big news is, though, that Michael Bloomberg, coming out with all of that spending, something like $400 million so far that he has spent, has basically helped him move into third place in the national polls. A Real Clear Politics average now has Bernie Sanders leading in the Democratic contest with a 24.8% average. Joe Biden's fallen back down to 18.5%, though still in second. But Bloomberg has now moved up to 15% in the national polling. Of course, those national polls are less important than individual states right now that are holding actual elections. But Warren down below that, and then Buttigieg and Klobuchar below that. So Bloomberg is making a statement, Bill. What do you expect from Bloomberg in the debate?
I don't know. But I'm definitely going to be watching, because there could be two kinds of Bloombergs. I think there could either be this train wreck as they all gang up on him for various things, or I think he could be masterful. You know, I mean, he as mayor of New York is not unfamiliar with being at the microphone and getting a lot of contentious questions thrown at him. You know, he did that for a long time. So it could go either way. I have to say, I've been disconcerted by the direction of his campaign in terms of the policies that he's been. It doesn't seem to me he's going with his strengths. He seems to be following like Joe Biden. Let's throw out all the things that made me a moderate.
And we want to talk about that. But right. You're just talking about it from a performance point of view, or?
Well, I think he has to show he can be president. You know, Amy Klobuchar has been complaining. First, people complained he's buying his way onto the debate stage, right? Now, Amy Klobuchar is claiming he better be on the debate stage, because we've had to go through this vetting process and answer questions, and he should have to do the same thing. I think there's actually a good case for that. And I would think at some point, you know, Mayor Bloomberg wants to do that.
Well, I think that if he's going to be the nominee of the party, he's going to have to at some go on the debate stage. So might as well be now, although you could make a case that he should probably wait until he's actually going to be on a ballot in a couple of weeks. But it's not that far off. The context in which this debate will take place, Kim, with Bloomberg on stage, is Bloomberg is taking incoming now from opposition research. People are dredging up story after story about things that he previously said in his long public career in New York and elsewhere at this or that, whether it be the Aspen Festival, where he was opining about criminal justice and how you have to throw young black men up against the walls and frisk them because they're more likely to have weapons. And now you have the Washington Post story on the weekend, which documented a history, it claimed, of insensitive comments about women in the workplace, and had a misogynist attitude towards women in the workplace. I read that piece. I thought it was damaging. On the other hand, I know a lot of our colleagues, we had a spirited discussion about this, thought at our meeting today, they thought he would not be damaged by this. What do you think?
Well, a lot of the stuff that was in that story has actually been out before. If you had the privilege or distinct lack of privilege of living in New York when Mayor Bloomberg was in charge, this came up prior to some of his other elections. You know, and they in particular highlighted this a book of supposed sayings from Michael Bloomberg, The Wit and Wisdom of Michael Bloomberg, which has been out about 30 years now. You've heard of this before, but a lot of really disparaging things against women, a suggestion that he was opposed to or made a hostile situation around women who were pregnant while in his employment. I think it could go either way in that some people, the important thing here is that this is coming out in a new era, right? The Me Too movement, in which there is this hyper focus, especially in the Democratic electorate right now, on allegations like this. On the other hand, some people look at Michael Bloomberg, you know what you're getting. They will maybe more likely to write this off as something that happened back in the 80s. I also think there's one important distinction, too, that the allegations go to his saying inappropriate things or making a supposed hostile workforce, but not in any way allegations that he, you know, inappropriately did anything with a woman, which is an important thing to say. And it's also important to note that he has denied it all as well, too. But he's going to get hit with this on a stage, probably by the female candidates up there, and we'll see how he answers.
Particularly regarding one statement to a woman regarding when she was announced that she was pregnant, he said, allegedly said, kill it. And she has said that she spoke about it at the time. She has a male witness who overheard that as well. Claims he did, but then Biden, Bloomberg denies it, and we don't know how much what's true, but we know that that is a story that is going to be out there. One other element that is likely, I think, to get a hearing on Wednesday from either a question by the moderators or from his challengers on stage will be, why don't you just open up the non-disclosure agreements that you signed, that the company signed with various women over the years? If there's nothing to hide, so get it out. And I think that will be a talking point, Bill.
Yeah, I don't see him doing that,
I mean, releasing it?
Releasing it. But either way, it's a bad choice for him. He's either, you know, keeping something quiet, or on the defensive about why he's keeping quiet. And I think that's his problem. It's put him on the defensive a little more than I think we might have expected otherwise from it, you know, from a policy point of view. It's also helps neutralize, you know, a lot of people may even support Donald Trump's policies, but they can't abide his character, his behavior and so forth and crudity. And so this would neutralize a lot of that, you know, if the guy going up against you has this has all these things in his background, and particularly in Bloomberg's case, I'd heard a lot of these specific allegations over the years. I didn't know it was collected in a booklet that was used at a roast of him, you know, at his company. So these things can come back to haunt you.
We're talking about the Democratic presidential campaign and Michael Bloomberg in particular, and you're listening to Potomac Watch from the Wall Street Journal.
This message comes from Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, destination-focused dining, and cultural enrichment on board and on shore. And every Viking voyage is all-inclusive with no children and no casinos. Discover more at Viking.com.
From the opinion pages of the Wall Street Journal, this is Potomac Watch.
Welcome back. I'm Paul Gigot with Kim Strassel and Bill McGurn, and we're talking about the rise of Michael Bloomberg and his chances of rising to challenge Bernie Sanders for the leadership in the Democratic primary campaign. The other big issue, Kim, is that Michael Bloomberg has spent more money so far than anybody ever has spent in at this stage of the campaign, and maybe more than almost all candidates have spent before the end of the of an election, $400 million. It's an astonishing amount. You can't turn on the radio or television and not see a Bloomberg ad in many parts of the country. He's also flooding the social media with money, Facebook ads, Twitter ads, and likewise. And this is becoming an issue. It's vaulted him up in the opinion polls to where he's now a player in the campaign. But it's also being used by his opponents to say, well, he's trying to buy the nomination. He's a billionaire. This is plutocracy. This is an assault on democracy to let a rich man do this. And I would assume that you're going to hear an awful lot of that from the other Democrats on Wednesday.
Yeah, I think from every other Democrat on Wednesday, we've now heard it from every single one outside of the debate stage and mentions of it in prior debates. It will be a focus on Wednesday. I think the hard part, though, Paul, is that separating out this question of how much of Michael Bloomberg's rise in the poll is a result of his money versus how much of it is a desire among the Democratic electorate for a candidate who may be a little bit more centrist or even a lot more centrist on financial policies, who simply is a big contrast to some of the other candidates there, or how many Democrats, in fact, like the fact that Michael Bloomberg has a lot of money because it means that he would use it to try to beat Donald Trump and take the White House. But he's going to have to, you know, answer those questions. He has in the past. His argument is, look, I'm not embarrassed by my dollars, and I'm going to use it to do the thing that this whole party wants. We'll see if that message resonates up on the stage.
Yeah, I think we're going to find out. I mean, I am very much looking forward to the debate because the last one, I think, was very illuminative to see how they respond.
And had consequences.
Had consequences,
Klobuchar.
Especially for Amy Klobuchar. And I don't think she's going to get it, but I think she could take it from someone else, maybe Pete Buttigieg or so forth. And I think if there's a criticism of Bloomberg, I mean, she's been very critical of Mayor Pete on most of her performances and clearly does not think he should be up on that stage with them. But I think that if she goes after Mayor Bloomberg, it'll be a lot stronger than even Elizabeth Warren. I think she would do it in a much more punchy and telling way.
But aren't we finding out to some extent that maybe that the Democratic nominating electorate doesn't hate billionaires as much as the elites and the Twitter class does? Because clearly, Tom Steyer, who the only thing he has to recommend him apart from his ads is for Democrats would be that he supports impeachment and he spends a lot of money on climate change. He has no record in public to speak of.
And he loves everyone. That's what he said.
He supports everyone. Yeah. But then Mike Bloomberg does have a substantial record, 12 years as governor of the city, built a great company. And he's a substantial person. He is spending a lot of money to project that message. But I tend to believe, and this view is not shared by everybody, but I tend to believe that if you spend a lot of money to get the message there, but if the message is wrong and people don't agree with it or people don't agree with the messenger, then you can spend hundreds of billions of dollars and it's not going to work.
That's been our line right on Citizens United, that the spending is political speech. Tom Steyer is spending billions too, right?
But I don't think billions.
Not billions, millions.
Tens of millions.
Hundreds
of sure.
millions,
yeah.
Right? 200 million. But he's his message isn't getting through because, as you say, people don't really, it's political speech and he's not hitting a chord. If Mayor Bloomberg were to win, part of it would definitely be his resources, his money. But part of it would be that the party responded to the political message that he was offering, right? I mean, that's what it comes down to. And that seems to me fair enough. And I think actually looking at primaries and systems and candidates, for years we had primaries dominated by Bushes and Clintons because they had the advantage of name recognition, right? That's an advantage too. It's not the advantage of billions, but it's an advantage. And so it's nice for me to see alternative ways into the system because my view is people can always say no, the way they're saying no, to Mr. Steyer.
And I would argue also that because of this new era we're in of being able to raise relatively large amounts of money through literally millions of donors over the internet, small donors, $25 donors, $150 donors. Again and again, people giving $25 one month and then $25 again the next month for the after the next the latest call for money. What you have is the ability of somebody like Bernie Sanders, Kim, to compete in a way that he would not have before. And I think as you're looking at the, for example, the campaign in Nevada, Bernie Sanders is going to be as flush as anybody there in competing over the airwaves in that state. When he, if he wins Nevada, he's going to get a lot of free media. And then I think he's going to move on to South Carolina and have more than ample resources to compete there. So this idea that somehow a billionaire makes campaigns uncompetitive doesn't wash.
No, it doesn't wash at all. I mean, especially when the front runner, who has been the consistent front runner in the polls ever since Iowa, is the one complaining that he can't compete. You know, I think the other thing to add to what you said about online tools and the ability to do more fundraising these days is also magnified. The other part of that is television. You know, the rise of all of these televised debates, so many of them always happening right before for a big voting event. Look at Amy Klobuchar. She went into New Hampshire with almost no money in the bank, a shoestring operation. But in the days following a very good debate performance, she capitalized on that online fundraising and then capitalized even more when she came in third in New Hampshire. So there's plenty of means for the other candidates to get ahead and even stay ahead. It comes back to what you said. You have something that people want to buy.
The Nevada polling, just to fill people in, now on the 538 website, Nevada caucus polling average, Bernie Sanders' bill is pulling away. He's now got 26.1% in the average, whereas Biden is down to 15.1. And it's called Bloomberg not on the ballot, but below that are Warren and Buttigieg. So you have a clear separation here. And now in the betting markets, Bernie Sanders is at 84% chance of a victory.
Yeah, Nevada in many ways should be Bernie's kind of state in this race, because we know that Joe Biden has a lot of African-American support, tends to be older. Bernie's support tends to be younger, right? But Bernie has a lot of Latino support. Nevada is the first state in this system that has a significant Latino vote. Now, on the other hand, he's got some issues with the unions out there, because a lot of them see his Medicare for All program as taking away their kind of gold-plated health care plans, and they're right. So we'll see. It'll be a good test, but it does. Where if South Carolina is to Joe Biden's advantage, Nevada should be to Bernie's advantage.
There's no accident that Amy Klobuchar, Kim, campaigned with the Culinary Workers Healthcare Facility on the weekend, as our colleague Matthew King reported, because the Culinary Workers have come out and criticized Medicare for All as taking away their union benefits, which it would. If he gets upwards of 30% in Nevada, and there's no guarantee yet that will happen, but if he increases his support from New Hampshire and Iowa, that'll be another sign that he is beginning to raise his ceiling and consolidate some of his support. And particularly if the competition in the center-left remains divided, there's going to be a lot more pressure on Elizabeth Warren to drop out, and Bernie is going to be very hard to beat.
That, to me, is one of three things to really watch in Nevada. One is the level of support that Bernie gets. Just as you said, does he begin to grow it? Who does he take it from? I think the second question, and that gets to your Klobuchar point, is, does there begin to be some consolidation around one centrist alternative to Bernie Sanders? And is that a Pete Buttigieg or is it an Amy Klobuchar? Does Biden in any way stage a comeback in that state? And then third is, who does badly and who as a result potentially has to drop out after this race? And, you know, those are the folks you look like at, an Elizabeth Warren, who really has been struggling since Iowa.
So we're going to be watching all of this. It's interesting, just to finish a point that Bill made earlier, Mike Bloomberg has moved left on his program and his economic in particular and other proposals. He has just come out, for example, for a financial transactions tax on financial transactions, which has always been something that they do in France, but not here. Yeah. And doesn't even work in France. But
as with most things in France,
it's an old reliable with Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren. He has come out for a $5 trillion tax increase. $5 trillion, which is more than triple the amount of the Donald Trump tax cut that passed in 2017. This is over a 10-year period, but it includes tax increases really across the board, and it's kind of Sanders light, if you will. I guess he feels this is the price of admission to get to a hearing in a Democratic primary. But I think it takes some of the appeal of him to centrist voters, takes that away if he does get the nomination and runs against Trump.
Well, partly it's a similar phenomenon with Biden, right? And when Biden started, Bloomberg was giving a speech saying that he wouldn't be running because no way in heck that he was going to be out there giving an apology tour, and he's sort of done it. The irony is that Elizabeth Warren and Bernie have moved the goalposts so far to the left that even with this, you could make a claim that is very moderate and modest compared to what Bernie or Elizabeth Warren want to do. And I think that's what he's hoping. But I have some sympathy for him. He is fishing for votes in a progressive pond.
Kim, do you think it is the price of admission? And is it shrewd?
It's not shrewd. And here's why. Because why Mike Bloomberg, right? And this was the point I was trying to make earlier about, is it his money or is it him? The real merit to a Mike Bloomberg is that he sort of suggested he'd get in and be a truer centrist in the race. He got some attention even before he officially got in by taking aim at the Green New Deal, saying this was fantasy. You know, you can't do this in an economy and in energy markets, and also being very aggressive about Medicare for All plans. If he begins to look more as though he's just your solid lefty on financial issues and economic issues, as well as anything else, he loses some of his juice, especially because, and I'd point this out, you know, don't lose sight. The Democrats have got to retain their kind of Rust Belt voters out there. These folks that the blue collar that went for Trump, but some of them are traditionally Democrats. Mike Bloomberg's got other liabilities on that front, in particular on his social issues, his gun control issues, his own climate change program, which isn't as nuts as a Green New Deal, but would certainly put a lot of coal workers out of work. So he's got to retain his differences in some way. And I don't see how he does it with these kind of policies.
All right. We're going to see how he performs on stage on Wednesday. Going to be an important moment. Thank you, Bill. Thank you, Kim. Thank you all for listening. We'll be back tomorrow with another edition of Potomac Watch.
This message comes from Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, destination-focused dining, and cultural enrichment on board and on shore. And every Viking voyage is all-inclusive, with no children and no casinos. Discover more at Viking.com.